The Babylon Podcast was our last best hope for B5 fans. A self-contained show, 1 hour long, located on an RSS feed. A place for interviews and episode discussions for a whole bunch of humans and aliens. A shining beacon in cyberspace, all alone on the web. It was the dawn of the third age of podcasting, the year the Lost Tales came upon us all. This is the podcast about the story of the last of the Babylon stations. The year is 2007. The name of the show is the Babylon Podcast.
And welcome back to a fresh new calendar year of Babylon Podcast. I am Summer Brooks.
I'm Tim Fresh Calendar Years.
Ooh, and I am the ghost of Koshmas Past.
Are you sure that's not ghost of Koshmas Pest?
Pest, ooh. Perhaps. Yes, it is a new year. You're right, Summer. We're starting off clean slate, fresh attitude. No more digs at the priests. Okay. This 2008 will be the year of I won't offend anybody.
Oh boy!
Yeah. And
who's taking the Vegas odds on that one?
Yeah, right. I was gonna say, just like today is the most smoke-free day in the year.
Yeah. Yeah. Did you make resolutions?
Actually, I have one. Yes.
Okay. What's your resolution? Can you tell us?
I resolve to draw 15 minutes, at least 15 minutes every day.
Oh, like draw.
Yeah. Just sit down with a
not like drawing blood
and a pen. And I'm not like drawing flies or anything like that.
He got a bunch of coloring books for Christmas, guys. That's all it means.
Yeah. The crayons I sent got.
They were all in pieces, Jeffrey. I'm not quite sure what was up with that.
Unbelievable.
How about you, Summer?
I didn't have time to make any.
Well, you have to the end of the show.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Sure.
How about you, Jeffrey? What's on your plate for 2008?
Should be. Well, I'll tell you what. I kind of made two resolutions there. They are the typical resolutions, but I had two of them, and I want you to know that I've actually tried to do them. The first was, I know you probably kicked me off the show, but I'm going to try to drink a lot less this year.
Wow.
And that's I know. And so I started right away as I was the designated driver for the New Year's Eve party that I went to. So I didn't have anything on New Year's Eve. I know. You're shaking your head. You can't believe what you're hearing.
Explains the tremor and the force that we all felt.
Exactly. And then the second thing I resolved to do is to be just a little more careful about the food that I take in and what it is and try to eat a little bit better. So this morning I have a guest in from out of town, and we went to breakfast, and I ordered my little egg breakfast, and she said, well, what kind of potatoes you want for that? And I said, no potatoes. What kind of toast? No toast. I'll just have some fruit. And she looked at me and cracked up because she knew exactly what I was doing. And she knew exactly that this would be like the one and only meal that I would actually make those kind of order requirements, you know, and that I'll blow it by, you know. So I'll be fat and drunk by February. Don't worry.
Wow.
All right.
Well, what about you, Michael?
Me? Oh, yeah. Lord. I made one resolution about 10 years ago, and I've kept it ever since. And that was I resolved to never make another resolution. And boy, I tell you what, I've been keeping up with that just fine.
Yeah.
That's very funny. And congratulations.
That's like success.
Congratulations, Michael, because this is our first Babylon podcast in a all digital environment, huh?
Absolutely, and I'm still trying to figure this thing out, so it probably sounds really weird to you people out there because it's not quite dialed in yet. I'm going to be playing with this for probably the next couple months, getting it right.
And we got Tim a shiny new string so he could attach his end of the tin cans and our tin can.
Yeah, I opened a fresh can today. Empty
it always smells like tuna when we talk to him. I don't understand. Oh, no, but I'm not offending anybody. I mean, I wasn't singling out tuna fish or anything like that.
or dolphins or,
yeah,
or fishermen.
No. Make a note of it. He's made it 5 minutes so far. He's doing good.
Yep. Well, okay. here we go. Let me drop a little bit of news here. This is from the JMS Usenet mailing group. And we'll use this potentially to offend somebody to start with. The post was, according to Wikipedia, JMS has endorsed Ron Paul for president. When did this happen? Did he give the reasons he is supporting Ron Paul? And JMS actually answers, and it says, the entry is accurate. I donated $2,000 to his campaign in order to encourage a more moderate voice on the Iraq war. Then I discovered he wants to overturn Roe versus Wade and a lot of other hard-won civil rights legislation. So much for that. So there we go. Straight from the horse's mouth.
Wow.
Yeah.
Maybe we should let Summer run for president and get $2,000 from him.
Hey, I like that idea.
Yeah.
Hey, if Stephen Colbert can't get on the ballot, I don't think I have a shot.
Right, Colbert? Yeah, right.
Could Stephen Colbert take down 10 ninjas like you can?
Yeah.
Wow, that was a stretch there, Tim.
I know, I was real aggressive for it. All right, on to other things.
It's early in the year. Give him a chance.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, that's enough.
Yeah, how's your diet coming, Jeffrey?
I've got it reduced down to just one bottle of Patron.
Nice.
No starch.
Well, I think for tonight we are going to do a listener feedback show, clear out some of the stuff from the end of last year.
Really?
Yeah. I sent along like 8 voicemails. I've got about 4 things here to read. I think that will be tonight's show. Does that sound good to you guys?
That sounds
sure.
Funny.
All right.
Sure. Do we know any of these people?
We probably do, but we're going to take a quick break and then find out who these people are and what they want.
Heroes. The very word conjures images of women and men in noble costumes, paragons of virtue, harnessing powers beyond comprehension to fight for justice and defend good against the plots and ravages of evil. Kiepsie Branson once dreamed of being a hero, but she and the other members of the so-called third wave of superpowered humans have been judged to have abilities too weak and useless to be formally trained as heroes by the Academy. But as a villainous plot threatens to tear Seventh City apart, what Kiepsie and her friends learn is that in a world in which so-called heroes are manufactured by greed and driven more by agenda than principle, true heroism isn't about the strength of your powers or the shine of your costume. True heroes are those who make difficult choices for good with the powers that they have, whatever those may be. Playing for Keeps is the new novel by Murr Lafferty, available for free via podcast in both audio and PDF formats, and now available for purchase in print. For more information, please visit playingforkeepsnovel.com.
And we are back here today we are gathered together to address this thing called voicemail.
hey, wait. Also, let's hear it for Brad Bauer. Brad, for putting together our holiday shows for us. Thank you, Brad.
Thank you very much.
Brad
did a bang-up job editing
together. Giving us a vacation.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Those two holiday episodes.
Much needed, yeah. Exactly. And the thing that I found most interesting about each of the great little clips that Tim, you selected the clips, right?
Yes, I did.
But
let me say two things about the show. As I went through nearly a year's worth of material looking for those clips, two things struck me. Number one, we shared a lot of laughter doing the show, and that was a good thing. And number two, I talk a hell of a lot.
No. Get out.
Now, see, this would be the great
not my resolution for the new year.
this would be the one time where seeing the video feed would be great, because you could hear us trying to wind down, and then I made the fatal mistake of saying, "Are there any last thoughts?" You know, and last thought normally means, you know, something you can, you know, sum up in a minute. And then Tim will just run with it, and Mike will just go, "Oh God, I can't go to bed yet."
Well, I agree with you, Tim, because the comment I was going to make is I noticed at almost the beginning of each one of the little segments that Brad stuck in there was us laughing hysterically about something.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it was good on content because it really, you know, portrayed the quality of geekness that we bring to the table here. But obviously all the jokes were, well, they were probably offensive to somebody, which is why we don't do that anymore.
This week, anyway.
Yeah, exactly. Okay.
All right. Well, let's start with the first voicemail.
Okay.
Someone's trying to frame me for the explosion in the Cobra Bay. They planted a schematic of the bay and a pouch of Centauri ducats in my quarters.
Centauri. Potato?
Potato.
Tomato?
Tomato.
Let's call the whole thing off.
I think Andrew from Madison sent that along to us for no reason other than I think it's just funny.
I love
that. But it's not very offensive.
Yeah, I like that's actually one of the more amusing blooper outtakes. I miss those. I'm going to have to go home and watch them. Okay, next one.
Happy New Year, Babylon Podcast. It's Kurt in St. George. I was listening to you guys deep geeking on ceremonies of light and dark when a thought occurred to me. At the end of the episode, everyone has given up something of value. Everyone has revealed a secret. Everyone except Delenn. What did she give up? What was her secret? And who did she tell? Before I throw that open to you, I'd like to give you my interpretation. I think we saw what she gave up in the episode Severed Dreams. When she broke the Grey Council, she was giving up the past. She was giving up any hope that the Grey Council could do what it was supposed to do. Her secret? Her secret was her attraction to Sheridan. Or perhaps she put it in more roundabout terms, saying that if she was going to be a bridge to the human race, it would be through Captain Sheridan. And I think the person she would most likely have told this would have been Lanier. Her secret and what she gave up were too personal, too Minbari for her to have revealed to a human being. And while presumably there are other Minbari on the station, I don't feel she would have been comfortable telling anyone else but Lanier. And that leads to another question. When would she have told Lanier? When she was in the hospital? I don't think so. Delenn doesn't strike me as the kind of person who would put something like this off. She would have already told him this before the kidnapping. When Lanier reveals his secret to Marcus that he is in love with Delenn, but he knows she's fated for another. This knowledge is not just based on his personal observation, it's because Delenn has already told him so. Lanier may have already had something of a knife stuck in him, based on his observation of Delenn's feelings. But unknowingly, I think she's really twisted it in him now. Anyway, that's my interpretation of the situation. I'd like to hear yours now.
Ooh.
Damn, I should just give him his own show.
No way, because then Mike will complain about how it sounds like ass. he doesn't need any more reasons to complain. You know what? I must respectfully disagree on a number of accounts. I think when what the Len gave up occurred when she underwent the transformation in the chrysalis. Because if you think about all one of the undercurrents in that first year was, are you sure you want to do this? Why do you have the presumption that you should be doing this? That's when she makes her big break. It's not when the Great Council is dissolved. That almost is, you know, a logical event that happens with everything else that's going on by that point. But by making the transformation to become the human Minbari hybrid, that's where I think Delenn makes the major break, where she you know, gives up something. She basically gives up her position in Minbari society. You know, her position on the Grey Council is forfeit. Her stature amongst other Minbari is severely weakened. And as for telling anybody, I don't think she tells Lanier, because I'm not certain that she quite recognizes the depths of her feelings for Sheridan at this point. I mean, you know, and here I could be wrong, and it's obvious that both of them recognize that there's something happening between them, but it's, you know, you think about Zahadum when Sheridan finally leaves to the shadow homeworld with Anna, and he leaves the message for Delenn, and that's the first time he says, I love you. And the way Lanier says that she's fated doesn't speak to someone who's been told. It's somebody who knows with his eyes open that things are never going to go his way, but he can't help himself. So that's my two cents on it. How about you, Summer?
I agree with your disagreeing for the simple fact that I believe Delenn has always known that Lanier, you know, worshipped her, had a crush on her, from what we hear later in season, was it 5?
I think I know where you're going.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I mean, yeah, he, you know, they think they're going to die on the White Star, and he says, I love you. She says, I know, you know, kind of, you know, one of those, oh, geez, we're not going to die. That's kind of awkward now, isn't it?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
She's always known. Probably from, you know, not very long, you know, before this. I'm thinking she probably knew when she got out of the chrysalis, that how he felt, that he had feelings for her, that he was suppressing. But no, I don't think she would have told him that. I don't. If there was any one person she would have confided something like that in, it would have been Drawl.
Yeah, right. Good choice on that. And given the fact that Drawl is in the Great Machine and not readily accessible, shall we say, it's my feeling that she probably didn't tell anybody. Here's the other wrinkle that we don't know about this rebirth ceremony. You know, the implication is that Delenn is master of ceremony, shall we say. There's no indication as to whether or not the person who is officiating over the ceremony is obligated to make the confession and or the giving up of something. Jeffrey, any comments?
Two priests walk into a bar. And, no, stop.
And their heads go bang.
Stop. I didn't say that. No.
Okay.
It's going to be a long year.
That long year is going to last about 2 weeks. Watch it.
Oh, come on.
Okay, next one.
Hello there. I just wanted to share a little something with you. I just worked at a 50-something hour week, and I was in the back of the computer rack in the computer room trying to have someone help me hook up a keyboard and monitor and a mouse. And seems that the new convention is that keyboards are purple connectors and mice are green connectors. So I'm in the back. I said, which one do you want where? He says, purple. And I yelled back, green. started. The Babylon Sun. Three people walked by and went, "What are you two up to?" So it's fun. I love it. Bye.
That's very funny.
I love it.
As we were talking off air, I just right after Christmas purchased a new car, and its color is gray. And I was telling this to a friend of mine who's also a B5 fan at work today, and I said, "It's a gray color," and he goes, "That's very appropriate."
That's you. You need to get a personalized license plate now, Tim, to go with it.
Oh yeah.
What's it going to be?
Well, actually, I already had one.
Oh.
Yeah. Sorry, it said rocketry, but with all the vowels taken out. It's a NASA plate too. There's, we have Langley Research Center here in Virginia, and it's a NASA facility. It's got NASA meatball on it. And
in Virginia, do you get to keep that then? The plate stays with you.
Yep.
Very good.
Yeah.
Very good. Okay.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah, get your geek on, boy.
Yep.
As always.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, guys, it's Gary. I hope everybody had a good Christmas and a happy New Year so far. Donna, I once again still hope that you're able to get some sleep during the course of all this. The reason I'm calling was I went out with my wife to to go see a movie over the weekend. Hold on, I know. It'll be Babylon 5 related in just a minute. And we went to see National Treasure Book of Secrets. So I'm sitting there watching the movie, and, I'm thinking, it's a nice way to, present some basic history facts to people. They probably get a little bit more out of it than they did their high school history class. And I don't see any huge glaring omissions, other than, of course, the City of Gold, secret books, and things like that. But, it's all in jest, and it presents some, historical facts that are nice. Anyway, back to the point of my call. So I'm sitting there watching, and as they're in Buckingham Palace, they get arrested by one of the staff guards. And lo and behold, it's our favorite techno mage, Peter Woodward. He had several minutes of screen time and a fair number of lines. I really enjoyed seeing him. Couldn't help but, say to my wife, look, honey, it's Galen for Babylon 5. And of course, I would have said Crusade, but that would have been too much for my wife. If she knows she's in the B5 universe, that's going to be good enough for me. But it was a lot of fun, and as I was sitting and watching him on the big screen, I said, gosh, I wish there could have been a Crusade movie. That would have been a hell of a lot of fun. Anyway, so once again, Peter Woodward is in National Treasure Book of Secrets. You won't miss him. He's got a decent piece in it. And go out and take a look. The movie was good as a whole. Take care, guys. Bye.
Okay.
There we go. Didn't know that.
I didn't even know he was in that movie.
I didn't either. Speaking of Peter Woodward in movies, we'll skip to this. We got an email from Peter Dowling, who writes, "Hi, all. I'm not sure if this has already been mentioned, but the film Peter Woodward wrote, called Closing the Ring, directed by Richard Attenborough, is due for release this week," and that was actually back at the end of December, so it's out in the UK.
Ooh.
And according to the IMDb, the basic plot is that a young man searches for the proper owner of a ring that belonged to a U.S. Bomber pilot in World War II who had crashed onto the Cave Hill just outside Belfast on 1st of June, 1944. So it sounds like a romance kind of thing.
Ew.
Yeah, I know. No, not enough.
No.
You know?
They probably kiss.
Ew.
Ew.
You're kidding.
If he's a crashed bomber pilot, that could get messy.
Ooh, maybe he's a zombie bomber pilot.
And yeah.
Life looking for
there you go.
Girlfriend who's now married.
Oh, no. Somebody say zombie? No. What was that?
Yeah, suddenly. Mike, yeah.
Oh, no.
We're talking about you.
Mike is reanimated.
Yeah.
Brain. Planes.
All right, next one.
This came to us from Jacques Cousteau. Or Mars.
Or zombie.
I like this one a lot. Yeah, exactly. A little bit creepy. We could just do a whole show of that. Just let that air
no.
for
us. Yeah, I kept it in there. I thought it's in keeping with that weird one we had last year. Was sort of
was that another butt call?
Yeah, well, maybe it was
a butt call.
I thought everybody had flip phones now to prevent the back pocket sitting down and accidentally.
Everybody with
the
their
phone
little
call.
Their trios and their mm-hmm. crackberries. Yeah. All those buttons are exposed. So yeah.
Ass dialing is still.
I don't want to know if it was an iPhone, how that would have happened. Yeah,
ass dialing is still a big, big part of having a cell phone. That's normal.
Okay, then. Thank you for that. Next one.
Well, I just got finished watching season 4 of the Babylon series. And wow, I'll tell you, it's awesome. The good thing I like about Babylon 5 is that it actually stands up even after all this time. I did have some ideas as to how we could possibly show Warner Brothers. I noticed that inside the box set, they have little proof of purchase tabs. If we sent those tabs to Warner Brothers, maybe they would realize how many people of us are buying their disc sets and so on. Might be a good idea to show them how much we want more Babylon 5. And also, something else I was thinking is when you get around to making some T-shirts and stuff, that you also might want to make some Babylon podcast coffee cups on whatever sites you're having that stuff made up on. Anyway, that's my idea. Talk to you later. Bye.
Okay.
Jeffrey, maybe you're the Hollywood insider here. Maybe you can answer the question. What is the purpose of the proof of purchase tabs that you find in DVDs and stuff?
Two priests walk into a bar.
Each with a proof of purchase tab.
I always thought that the
proof of purchase was just something that, you know, you could cut out and mail in to, you know, with you. If you got, like, you know, 4 box tops and $4.95 shipping, you'd get the free decoder ring, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, but what is it for in, like, a DVD?
In case, well, some DVDs do have, like, mail-in orders. They do.
Okay, I guess.
But, yeah, I don't know.
I mean, because as far as it goes, Warner should know how many units they've moved, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah,
yeah,
they know.
Exactly.
They're just not telling. Oops, did I say that out loud?
Yes.
what would have been fun is to do a Willy Wonka kind of deal with the proof of purchase tags, that, like, there was one golden proof of purchase out there.
Right, you would have gotten a trip to the real Babylon 5 space station.
Yeah.
If they start doing DVDs, like those limited edition comic book covers, I am so staying away.
Mm, yeah. Yeah.
Okay, next one.
I don't think it would be at all unreasonable that anybody who gets a book or buys a book contributes, let's say, 10% of the cost of that above, you know, pays a little kind of like a finder's fee to Mike for his new mixer board.
Hey. I like that idea.
That's the other word that gets him perked up. It's zombies and mixer board.
Yeah.
Hey, we got the Uber new mixer, so I'm all happy about that. But
you just got to find you some zombies.
I tell you, no, I could still use some money to pay for it. It still hasn't been paid for yet. Of course, right now it sounds like ass, but hey.
Well, that's
no,
why,
the mixer doesn't.
Because you haven't finished paying for it.
All right, one last voicemail.
Hello there. Now I got the right phone number. Following up on Jeffrey's comments in Babylon podcast number 92. That Buzz Aldrin said that the objective was to get to the moon. That's like old news, pardon the phrase. If you check, there's a James Caan movie where he played. He gets the embodiment of the original plan, which was get the guy to the moon, set him up, let him live there, and then we'll figure out how to get him home somehow or another. It's an old movie. It's from back in the 60s, obviously. I can't find the name off the top of my head, and I never know the stuff when I meet it. So I thought I'd share that. And the idea of a Vorlon blog, I mean, come on. Oh, the name of the movie is Countdown. A Vorlon blog is stupid. I'm sorry. I don't want to read if. No. Maybe. Or, you know, I mean, come on, come on. Talk to you guys later. Bye.
Okay, wait a minute. First he disses me because he's telling me I'm sharing old news. Is that what he was saying?
I'm not sure he was dissing you, or I'm not sure what that was. Actually, I would say that if you're going to call up and rag on the Vorlon's blog, you at least need to state your name for the record. You know what I'm saying there?
All right. You know, no, that's all right. That's all right. I didn't.
But
I didn't.
You know, here's the thing. What he's saying is that he. What I heard him say was that the original idea for landing a man on the moon was just to get him there and then not worry so much about bringing him home. But never any place that I've read was it ever like, you know, here's your one-way ticket to the moon and a couple extra bucks, maybe you'll catch a bus to come back. You know, there was always, you know, Kennedy said, send a man to the moon and bring him, return him safely to Earth before the decade is out. So, anyways, I don't know.
I
wasn't hearing that right.
Yeah. And based on some of the feedback I've received, a lot of people are interested in hearing from the Vorlon. So
there you go.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah. Everybody wants their own personal yes, no,
well,
maybe.
That's old news.
You've known that for years.
I still think we can have more fun with it than just, you know, random yes, no, maybes.
I do too.
Oh, yeah. There's so much more that we can do.
You know what we need to do is we need to do the equivalent of the Vorlon magic eight ball. Take the helmet, and where the little eye is, that's where the little, you know, triangle thing appears. You shake up the helmet, you ask the question to the Vorlon. You shake it, it goes, and then you look at it, and, you know.
Yeah, I do. I think so. And we should open it up to all kinds of subjects. Anything goes.
Except defensive ones.
Get
a hold of a Vorlon magic. Yeah,
exactly. Right, right. We're going to have the archdiocese calling us soon.
No, we could have somebody, you know, submit essays on what, you know, what it means to be a Vorlon, conspiracy theories, you know, the Vorlon and the Drazi, what were they really doing behind that closed door, that kind of thing.
I want to hear from the college grad students who are busy working on really intense theses that will change life, cure cancer, improve our world and our future and make it a better place long after we're gone, so that I can offer up some input to them now to help make them because anyway.
Because they'll buy it now. Once they graduate, they won't. Yeah.
Yeah. Or maybe we'll just let Buzz Aldrin do all the talking.
That's not a bad idea.
That's old news.
It's smart. That's good old news. I'd be happy to listen to that.
Oh, that's bad.
All right.
Yeah, that's it for the voicemail.
Boy, we are kicking 2008 off with a boom, aren't we?
I've got a couple emails,
Let's take a quick break first, and we'll get back to the emails and some in-depth discussion on the written word sent to us.
Yeah.
You've entered the twisted mind of Scott Sigler. You've descended into the inner darkness of Phil Rossi. Now, journey into the imagination of T. Morris. This is Moravi Remastered, the world's first podcast novel, reimagined with a new soundtrack, restored scenes, and the voice talents of Leanne Mabry,
Christiana Ellis, Philippa Ballantyne,
and George Harab.
And the podcast continues in the fall of 2008 with Legacy of Moravi.
And in 2009 with an original podcast anthology, The Dragon Clan of Moravi.
A project so sweeping in scope.
An adventure so epic in scale.
It takes two ballsy voiceover professionals
to cut the promo.
Moravi Remastered.
Pirates. Ninjas.
And one hell of a good time.
Subscribe at www.moravi.net.
And enjoy the ride.
And we are back with our trailing segment of listener feedback. The people who took their time out to write in questions to us via email. And Tim, why don't you start us off there?
Okay, here we go. This one we will start with our friend Kate from Chicagoland. Hi, Babylon Podcast crew. If you can get him, I would love to hear you interview Kim Strauss. It would be interesting to hear what it was like playing the Alien of the Week.
Jeff? That would be interesting to try to find Kim. Yeah. Kim, yeah, exactly. That would be very cool. That's a good suggestion. Thank you. Kate, was?
That was Kate, yep. Kate from Chicago.
Is she a member of your fan club?
I think she is, yes, actually. Yeah. Jealous?
How big's the membership now?
That's a personal question.
I didn't say how big's a member. I said how big is the membership.
Kate, I think three.
Yeah. Well, there you had a good year, didn't you?
Yeah. Hey, what can I say? Okay, here we go. You ready?
Mm-hmm.
This is from Mike Smithwick.
Good old Mike.
Yes.
Yes. Hello? What's Mike got to say?
He says, are you ready?
Yeah, okay. We're in trouble again. Mike always
Hello,
corrects.
Tim, Jeffrey, Summer, Bob, Carol, Ted, Alice, John, Jacob, Jingleheimer, Schmidt, and the entire relief pitching staff of the 63 Mets. And they're doing better than we are, I'm sure. One thing that was so compelling about Babylon 5 was that it was all about breaking conventions for more traditional space sci-fi shows. Star Trek. Sometimes I got the idea that JMS had a checklist of so-called rules he intended to break during the run of the series. For example, he dared to depict the bathroom on a spacecraft, lead characters getting drunk, slovenly staterooms, janitors, pickpockets, and so on. Things were never neat, tidy, and sterile as other shows. And so when Severed Dreams aired, JMS dared to break yet another convention. When Major Ryan came on, played by Bruce McGill, I thought, hey, what's a chubby guy doing in an EA uniform? Then it hit me. Not all military personnel, particularly career types, retain their once Adonis-like physiques, Norman Schwarzkopf being a prime example. And so Bruce was clearly cast to show that you didn't have to be a perfectly fit, well-chiseled, and firm-of-flesh gent to wear an EA uniform. You might see a normal guy every once in a while as well. I thought this was brilliant. Not only that, Bruce McGill seemed to represent, in one way, the everyman who was getting caught up in a war he would much rather sit out, elevating the tragedy and pathos of it all while bringing us even more into the story. Then I listened to commentary on the DVD. From that I learned that was just bunk, that JMS meant to cast the perfectly fit, well-chiseled, and firm of flesh Everett McGill instead, and my childlike dreams were themselves briefly severed as a result. Only briefly, however. So in my alternate universe, I'll continue to believe that JMS chose a chubby everyman for this role for whatever existential reasons I care to make up. Damn it. there's a little bit more here. I'll read that in a second. You know, it's funny because that's one of the things I have noticed, not necessarily to Major Ryan, but certainly a fine example is the security staff on the station. All sorts of body types.
Mm-hmm.
And men and women and black, white, red, yellow, green.
Yep, short ones, tall ones, scruffy ones, not scruffy ones.
Right, exactly. Just like you'd find in real life.
Yeah, and if you watch any of the 6 o'clock news and any of the footage from Iraq, Afghanistan, any of our fighting forces, they're all, you know, you still see a mix. Not everybody is Adonis-like, as you say.
Yes, exactly.
They can't all have our physique, can they, Tim?
Nope, not at all. Yeah. Hey, what did you have with your eggs this morning?
Fruit.
Oh, good for you.
I had fruit today, and I am 30 pounds lighter. It works for me.
Uh-huh. Good. Mike also finishes up with, he says here, I'll second Tim's praise for First Man. It's a wonderful book. And Mr. Armstrong spoke a few years ago locally, and the humility of one of the most famous men in history is a refreshing sight to behold. He told how very smart scientists figured out an experiment to determine the distance to the moon to within about 3 inches. He described how they would have a mirror placed on the lunar surface and then bounce a laser off the mirror, timing the reflection. Armstrong stated that his role was merely as, quote, the technician who placed the mirror. We need more like him. Merry Koshmas to you all, from Mike Smithwick.
Mm-hmm. And he would know.
Yep.
He's a smart guy.
Indeed he is. All right, we got one last one here.
One more.
Here we go. This is also from Andrew from Madison. Howdy, Bab 5 pod people. CNN recently had a story about Star Trek fans doing a podcast about the Star Trek world while waiting for more movies about Star Trek. Wow, what a great idea. Maybe we could get some fans from across the world to make a podcast into the B5 world. And maybe they could tell a story about things happening in the B5 world that we could follow weekly while we wait for new stuff about B5. And maybe we could get the story covered by CNN. Well, 2 out of 3 ain't bad. Really enjoy the show, and I would love to have Claudia on the show again. Remember, we are all Kosh.
Yeah, you go.
Yeah.
That's great. That was very cool.
Yeah, the only I didn't even know that CNN had covered it, but I figured there's quite a few Star Trek podcasts out there. And, Star Trek has, a 30-year head start in terms of building a fan base than...
Yeah, and the other thing to remember, too, is at this point, Star Trek has become so integrally woven into pop culture that even people who are not fans of Star Trek know what you mean when you say have Warp Factor 1 or Beam Me Up or, all the catchphrases that are now taken out of context. Not everybody knows what you mean when you say it's too late for the Pebbles to vote.
But the ones who giggle in the background. So the ones who giggle in the background when you say that, those are the people you want to go talk to.
Exactly. If the one voicemailer said, if someone asks, give me the purple one, you call back green, then you know. Yeah, exactly. So I was in line a few years back at an airport in Orlando. I have a PsyCorp badge that I wear on a coat.
Nice.
And this guy across the crowded line caught my eye, and I could tell what he was looking at, and he gave me a nod, and I gave him a nod back, and never saw him again, but I knew where he stood. So cool.
I thought that was going to lead to another one of your gay stories.
No. Okay. No. Remember not offending anybody.
No, that wasn't I was offending you, actually.
I saw a bathroom stall.
Oh, no.
You know how those airport romances can be.
Yeah. Work for Tom Hanks.
I think there's an entire subculture there I don't want to know about.
It's when they go purple and you go green, that's when you really have to worry.
Uh-huh.
Well, that's it for emails for this time around.
That is it for our feedback. So we're all caught up on our outstanding feedback. We can jump back in next week to deep geeking and fun secret interviews.
Yeah.
Unless people have like B5 holiday stories they want to share with us.
Well, send those in too.
Although, we'll save them for next December, I'm sure. What are we going to do? We got to set a show resolution for this year.
A show resolution.
Yeah.
Resolution. To suck less.
to make it entertaining,
to be more concise and incisive in our deep geeking.
Taking this serious now.
To not be starstruck when Jeffrey gives us somebody cool to talk to.
Hey, you know what? The only time I think we've been starstruck, both of us got extremely giggly when we knew Bruce Boxleitner came on the first time.
No.
Every time, yeah.
And,
every time.
And no.
When, yes.
And when Walter Koenig came on, that was about as speechless as I've ever gotten.
Maybe
10 seconds, you know, but hey.
Speechless, yeah. I'll give you a speechless. But I tell you what, you had a major airport rendezvous with Keegan on here the other night.
Yeah, okay.
No denying that. He's jumping the fence.
Not.
Okay.
Get him back on, Jeffrey. That's your next task. Get talk to him some more.
Okay.
Yeah,
all right. Just saying.
Not denying.
No, I know. I can tell. Tim and Keegan sitting in the tree.
Oh, quit it.
You're just jealous. You're just jealous.
The people in the chat room had a great, great time with Keegan, and I'm sure they would love for him to hop back in and just, you know, geek up a storm.
Yeah.
About new Babylon 5 stuff.
I'd like to know how far he's gotten in watching the series.
Oh.
If you're out there listening, let us know.
Oh, my gosh. There's a scary thought.
All right, anything else?
Nope, that's it.
All right.
Really? Yeah. That was our first digital discussion? Yeah,
that was. That was our first entirely digital discussion, and apparently we have to re-record everything so Mike won't, like, cringe the entire show.
I got a lot of work to do here yet.
As you said, Mike, it sounds like ass, and that's because that's where we talk from.
Well, that'll do it for this show. We will be back next time with more deep geeking and all the other fun stuff you love to hear us talk about. If you want to send in your own comments, that email address to use is babylonpodcast@gmail.com, or you can call it in a message at 206-338-2259. That's 206-338-2259.
The year the great resolutions crept up on us all.
And we'll be back next time on the other side of the gate.